This is Kate Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. We are at NDC. This is June 13th, 2013. We're talking to Anthony Vanderhorn. Now, we earlier talked to Nick Molnar. You guys are a tight team working on Glimpse.
Yep.
We talked to Nick about two things. One was kind of where Glimpse is going next and some of that kind of things he wish he knew as an open source developer, 0 to 60 kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So what we'd like to talk to you about is two things. One is all the crazy JavaScript stuff you guys are doing.
Yeah.
The insane wizardry there that's going on. And then the other thing was just kind of more like starting up a project.
Yeah.
So let's start with the JavaScript stuff you guys are doing. Now, when you first got started, you told me it was basically injecting a div, right?
Yeah. So when we first started doing Glimpse, the idea that was that we're actually going to do the client as a Firebug plugin. And I don't know if either of you two have ever looked at writing a Firebug plugin, but it was not easy. And we had 5 weeks to develop Glimpse in to get it to Open Source Fest. And so I was like, Nick, just let me have a go at writing this in JavaScript. I'm going to throw a div onto the page. I'm going to have a go at rendering this, you know, fairly simply and see how far that gets us. And I did. And it turns out that got us a fairly long way. So, yeah.
So it got you a long way. Where did you first hit problems?
I think when we were looking, when we'd realized that beyond the 5 weeks, we had to keep maintaining the code, I hit a problem. So we divided up the division of labor. You know, Nick was doing more of the back end, I was doing more of the client side front end. And the realization that, you know, beyond just trying to do Glimpse, you know, on that initial prototype basis, but this is actually something that we wanted to maintain and allow other people to get involved with, that's where we ran into problems. And just the size of the file, because I started off with one file called glimpse.js, and it had everything in it, and just even the structuring of that as more logic got into it and whatever else, you know, not only did the file size become bigger, but, you know, it was becoming spaghetti code everywhere. And so that was a huge headache to maintain and trying to explain to other people.
I forget. I think early on, were you telling me, was it jQuery-based or was it doing all its own kind of thing?
Yeah, so we're still jQuery-based. Uh-huh. I've actually looked into more recently switching over to like vanilla JS because we don't aim to necessarily go back to IE6 support. But I think the biggest thing about that is the click event handling is still, I think, one of the biggest hurdles because I can use, you know, pick up elements by ID and class and all this sort of stuff. But that was one of the biggest hurdles for switching away from jQuery at this point, because obviously jQuery does add some weight. But very early on, we made the decision, let's take a dependency on jQuery. That's going to make it easy. I can do it, all the DOM selection and event wiring and everything that I want to do quite easily. Mm. And so what we actually did is we didn't want to make an assumption that everyone would have jQuery and that everyone would have the same version of jQuery that we needed. So we actually took jQuery and scoped it so that it was using I think it's jQuery Glimpse, and so that's what we inject into all of our closures and stuff like that so that we've got our own local copy of it.
Huh.
So if someone, I mean, obviously you're injecting yourself into the same DOM where the application's running, so you have to be very careful about what might leak out into global scope or what other people have already in the DOM when the scripts are writing for their application, right?
Yeah. It's really interesting having gone through trying to write CSS that is agnostic of anything else that someone might do.
Yeah.
So a really interesting case, and I hate to pick on you, John. That
no,
I ran into
pick away.
Recently with the NBC Music Store was I think you had like a selector that was like a TR, you know, colon hover, and then it would change the background. And so I was getting these really weird cases where, you know, as people were mousing over different things in the UI, if I hadn't explicitly prevented that from happening, it was changing the row colors and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And because we're actually in the DOM and we share that space with everyone else with the author.
So it should have been descendant selector or whatever.
Yes, yeah, something
And my excuse on that was I was trying to keep the CSS really light so that it wouldn't, you
I totally get it. But we've got to operate in those environments.
Because a web developer doesn't think, oh, someone else is going to be injecting other stuff into my page, right?
Yeah. And so that I don't impact people, I tend to scope everything to, you know, dot glimpse, and, you know, the names that I choose for classes are like glimpse dash something or other. Yeah. And that does mean the payload sizes are a little bigger because of that, but it means that I don't leak into their applications. But it does mean that I've had to come up with a weird CSS reset, as it were, that's actually scoped, because most CSS resets aren't scoped. Yeah. They're just application-wide, and that even runs into issues of its own with, like, order of precedence and how, like, the CSS styles are, you know, handled and all this sort of stuff, so...
I don't know if you've looked at some of the latest specifications. Is this something like Shadow DOM or some of these things about actual widgets components for web pages would help with?
Yeah, totally. So I actually looked into Shadow DOM and it was like, wow, this would actually solve a whole heap of problems. Because I do know some people who have, you know, they might have a widget that appears in the page. And what they do is they put that in an iframe and then they have communication between like the iframe and the parent page and stuff like that. And that's how they get around without this style abstraction. But we want it to be much more closely integrated with the user's page. Because in the future, we want to do all sorts of cool things, you know, with lighting up parts of the page and whatever else. And having to cross that boundary is more a pain than it.
How would Shadow DOM help with that for people that don't really know what it is?
Okay, so basically, you know, and I'm by no means an expert on Shadow DOM, but... it allows you to kind of separate some of the concerns around, you know, your layout and, you know, the actual structuring of your HTML. And so the concepts there. So it's similar to, what is it, like the visual in WPF, like the visual tree versus logical tree or whatever it is, where, you know, I have, you know, this is in WPF, you know, like a layout of some sort, and that layout contains a drop-down box. Those are the two logical concepts, but they're actually made up of, you know, borders and, you know, a lot of different pieces.
Right.
And you don't want to do the selecting through all of those pieces. You want to deal at, like, the logical level. And so that's where you start kind of getting in. And so I think with the Shadow DOM, you know, being able to more easily target some of the things and, you know, pull some of that stuff out and put it over here, as it were, and work with that independently of the rest of the DOM, that is a really interesting thought.
So you said you're moving away from just simply injecting a div. What else can you do?
So we're now a little bit fancier. So at the end of the day...
injecting two divs.
We actually inject about three or four, because what Glimpse does is you've got a little icon at the bottom right-hand corner, which is now a bar that stretches along the bottom of the page. Nick probably said something about that. But when you open up Glimpse, even though we come over the top of your text... you can imagine if you scroll down to the bottom of your page, we don't want to go out. We want to still allow you to see the bottom of your page. So one of the small little tricks we do is we actually inject a div in the bottom of your page that is the same height as whatever the panel is. So it pushes up the content of the bottom of your page so that when you scroll to the bottom, you can still see the footer of your page and all this sort of stuff.
You know, I was wondering about that earlier, because just having content that sticks to the bottom of a page... a normal page, not even doing all the stuff you're doing, is a pain in CSS. So in order to do that and work, that's really slick, having the pusher div. It's like a spacer div, right?
Yeah, that's it. And so we find that works. But other things that we've done, and probably one of the biggest architectural changes to the client, is switching everything over to a message bus system. And so what we have is like a publish subscribe system, and those we publish topics. So if you subscribe to timeline.render, okay, or a better example is tab.render, okay, you'd get whenever any tab is rendered. But if you subscribe to tab.render.timeline, you would actually just get the event called back for timeline. And so now that we have all of these different events, we're no longer passing callbacks, you know, through, you know, DOM objects and all this sort of stuff and trying to collect a collection of those. It's, okay, let's understand that we need an abstraction here where really what we're trying to do is publish an event that's occurred, and the message bus makes a huge difference in that.
Is there a message bus, like, did you use a library for that, or is there a common pattern that you use? use for...
Yeah, we did use a library, although it's not very complicated, and I kind of made a few tweaks to it because it kind of had more than what we needed. I can't remember where I took the... It was an open source one. But I've seen some much heavier weight ones, and it was just, you know, it's pretty simple. Subscriber subscribes to a topic, you know, it gets recorded in an array internally, and then whenever something gets published, it looks to see who's listening on that topic, and then, you know, rips through it, and or the list of subscribers. The only slight complication to that in this case is that topic hierarchy, so that it'll actually, you know, you can hook in at different levels.
So obviously you need some extensibility in your JavaScript because you allow people to plug in their JavaScript to operate on things. So in addition to the event aggregator or message bus, is there any other patterns that you use for that?
We do. So back in the early day, as I mentioned, Glimpse was all in one file. And I was like, this is becoming a headache. I'm literally pulling my hair out in front of the microphone thinking about it. But it was a real headache to manage, because even trying to find the code that I was trying to deal with was a pain in the butt.
Right.
So I went through an exercise of trying to better group the code. You know, so that was kind of like a first refactoring. And then I was like, now that I've got abstracted some of that stuff into better logical pieces, it was, okay, I want to now shift some of this stuff into separate files. Still with the aim that in the end it'd all be in one file, but I thought if it's in separate files, I could actually unit test or integration test some of those separate files, you know, to test just the logic in those files. And the way that I did it is I had like a main outer closure, as it were, and then I would just drop these blocks of, you know, out of build script, these blocks of, you know, different logic into this closure, and away I go. And so the way the unit test would work is I could pick up that individual file and just realize what dependencies it had and just mock out those dependencies and then run the tests against it. And so what I built that out, and it worked quite well for a while, but I was still, even within that Glimpse closure, I had a lot of global variables because there wasn't like local modules within that. And so the next round of refactoring on that was breaking all of that down into local modules and doing formal injection of different dependencies into those. And that's meant that, you know, when we do unit testing, it's much easier because there's a much more formal contract, because it's not just, here's some global variable that I forgot to realize was there. It's actually, this takes these four things, you know, and I can mock out those four different things, for instance.
You've essentially built out like a lot of single page application infrastructure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there points where you looked at using other like larger libraries, Backbone or something else to?
Yeah,
because they solve some of these concerns, right?
Yeah. So this module architecture was probably the closest thing that would have worked there is, let's say, Require.js.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did look at using it, but at the end of the day, because I didn't want to asynchronously download the different parts, okay, because the Glimpse client needs all of those parts to run. So as soon as it is installed or is on the page, it's going to download all of them. So it's not like I'm lazy loading stuff, or at least those modules. Glimpse isn't that big. And so what I would be doing is I'd have this formal, you know, require specification, for instance, and then I could use something like RJS to do the build time combining of that, so it wasn't asynchronous. And I'd end up with one file at build time. But that still then requires, you know, Require.js on top of that, you know, and all of its weight to handle that. And yes, there is a cut down version and all this sort of stuff. But when I was looking at it, it's like, for what I want to do and the knowledge of my environment and that I want to operate in, taking on the weight of that, when really all I have is some closures and I do have, you know, an object that I pass in, you know, for the different dependencies, it wasn't that complex, because even with require, you still have to define what your dependencies are. I'm just providing it with those dependencies. And so taking on that extra weight for, let's say, this dependency resolution,
right?
I wouldn't gain anything in this particular case.
Yeah.
But for a normal single-page application, yeah, definitely it'd be worth switching over to like Require.js or something like that to be able to leverage the lazy loading or whatever else.
Probably still useful to look at those libraries and see how they're doing things. And
yeah,
learn.
Totally.
Yeah.
And in terms of something like Backbone for like the UI framework side of things, we did look at that, And again, just the weight that in this case that they added to Glimpse was not substantial, but more than what we wanted to take on board. And again, at the end of the day, it was kind of like, what we're doing here isn't necessarily rocket science. And so it was more rendering engines. And so, you know, we spent more time focusing on, okay, here's an engine provider. You can register an engine. And, you know, this one's going to handle rendering key value pairs. This one's going to handle rendering a collection of objects and stuff like that, and how that process works, rather than, you know, I am going to have a view of some abstract type that, you know, I don't know about. And again, it probably could have fit, but it would have added complexity to our use case, where what we have is fairly straightforward.
What unit testing framework do you like, or are you using?
So, this is a little bit sad. I'm really ashamed to say that we don't have that many client-side unit tests at the moment.
Yeah, well.
So, what I actually do have is a test harness that kind of, I have all the different, the major logic within Glimpse is how to render different JSON objects and different combinations of JSON objects. Because at the end of the day, the client is just a really fancy JSON renderer. And so, I've got a page which has got like scenario like 1 through 40 or something like that. And at the moment, I visually check over to make sure that it's acting the way that I expect it to. And again, I'm
does it render a happy face if you get it right? What was that, the old WASP test or whatever?
Yeah, and again, I'm ashamed to say that, you know, when Nick's had a go at me about it, I'm like, he's like, how do you know it works? And I say, I've gotten so used to looking at this page that I know when something's wrong just by, like, looking at it. It's like that photo imprint in your head. Yeah. But in my defense, I am going to be doing unit tests on that because I need to. Yeah. And this page will make it very easy because I've put the investment into, you know, all the different combinations of stuff that we can render. And when I do put the unit tests in there for the rendering engine, I'll be able to say, you know, I'm expecting however many rows, columns, this sort of stuff. And that'll make it quite easy. But something that we're actually looking at the moment is we want to get, for instance, TestSwarm up and running because we want to have more surety across browsers and collecting those results. We're also looking at probably using BrowserStack. We've actually got to have a chat to them and see if they'll be nice and let us have some airtime on their servers. But what we'd like to do is whenever we deploy on our nightly basis or our nightly build, Team City will go, okay, browsers or to either BrowserStack or Team TestSwarm, you know, kick off, you know, the test of this latest version of the client, and then TestSwarm will go, okay, BrowserStack, do all your stuff. Okay, BrowserStack will kick up the different browsers, test against the TestSwarm that we've got up and running, and then it'll collect the results and pass that result information back to Team City so that we know, hey, we've done a good job. So
is it, you know, when you talk about BrowserStack and TestSwarm, I'm starting to think about like mobile browsers also. Yeah. Have you looked at, like, is there any kind of story for, or have you looked at, because that could be really helpful to have Glimpse. In a desktop browser, you can get around not having, you know, some visibility. You can even go and type JavaScript code into the URL bar or something, right? But when you're in a mobile browser, you're kind of blind.
So, totally. So, Glimpse has got a few interesting use cases when it comes to mobile. So mobile was something very early on that when I was working with Nick, and I'm holding up a mobile phone in my hand right now, and I was like, wouldn't it be cool if we could have Glimpse show up in the bottom of your mobile phone and it'd be responsive and it change and all this sort of stuff? And then I was like, yeah, I'm so not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, just
probably
just
wouldn't be readable anyway.
Yeah, probably not readable, all this sort of stuff. So we came to a realization, a very pragmatic realization early on, that we're storing the last 50 requests or whatever it is in memory on the server.
You've told me this before.
Yeah.
So you can go back to the browser.
So you can, so you can see that. And you can see the browser, the mobile navigating in real time.
Yeah.
That said, Glimpse is starting to become more more than just, you know, Chrome DevTools for the server, okay, because that's what we were originally, Firebug for the server or Chrome DevTools for the server. What we've actually realized is that we're much more framework-level insights, so whether it's MVC or Entity Framework or whatever else. And if you accept that and you accept that these framework-level insights is really valuable, all of a sudden, you go, well, why can't that metaphor carry into the client? Wouldn't it be cool if we could, and very useful if we could get the same information for like Knockout JS, for Backbone, you know, Ember JS, and whatever else? And this is where I start to see something interesting in the mobile scenario. That wouldn't it be interesting? And again, I don't know how technically we're going to do this at the moment, but if the client was capturing all of the different events that Ember was firing off and all of these different stuff, okay, yeah. And was shooting it up to the server, and so that then you can be, you know, on your desktop or whatever else that it happens to be on, and you can see that, you know, interaction live, a little bit like what you can do with Android and Chrome, you know, debugging tools and stuff like that. Except, again, this is all at a framework level.
Yeah.
So what's your hobbies?
My hobbies? So of late, I've been actually looking at growing more of my own food, funnily enough. And so I've been reading a lot of books about, you know, what it takes to grow, like, fruit and vegetables and all this sort of stuff. And looking into, and I never thought I'd say this, but, like, you know, raising chickens and, you know, goats and sheep and all this sort of stuff.
Wow.
And, you know, looking to have, like, enough food to support, you know, me and my fiancé and stuff like that. And so doing some of that and getting into, like, woodworking. I used to do a lot at school, and I've just been so tied up over the years doing stuff like this.
Yeah.
That I actually would like to try and get more into that. And like
artistic woodworking, or more what would be the term, functional woodworking, like build something for my house type woodworking?
Probably more artistic.
Yeah.
So when I was at high school, I did really, really well at woodworking, and I built some beautiful pieces of furniture, if it's okay to say that myself. And I've always wanted to do that, and I didn't pursue that career because, at least in Australia, I had the perception, rightly or wrongly, that people wouldn't be willing to pay, you know, however many thousands of dollars for, you know, a dining room table, right? As beautiful as it may be.
Anything new and exciting you want to talk about? Anything coming up for you? Any conferences or trips?
Yeah, so I'll be here at, obviously doing NDC, and really looking forward to my talk here, which is on Glimpse. And after that, I'll be in Monkey Space in Chicago. Doing a talk there, which is really exciting. And I'm actually moving back to the US. So I'm currently living in Australia, and we're moving back to New York. So I actually get to be able to work closer to Nick, unfortunately. No, don't tell him.
Okay, well, thanks. This was really interesting, and thanks a bunch.
No problem. Thanks for having me on board.